Smith is the title, right? So a pretty new, but a student, PhD student from Colorado State, has a big, extensive background in genetic improvement. So I guess more or less, Ryan, welcome to the family, right? And get ready. So if you guys will come up here, I'll get another chair. If you guys can have a seat and a microphone. You want to sit at the table? Jane, all right. Ryan? All right, you got one here. And I'll stand and roam around, but that'll work good. So. I think we've got enough. If somebody will want to use the lavalier here. I think all these work, and I'll kind of roam around and take questions from the audience. I'll get started. Okay, so our thought here, and this was actually one of Bruce's ideas, and I really like it, and it's a discussion, trials and tribulations of weekly evaluations. And we'll augment that title a little bit, slash single step, because there's a whole new set of challenges and opportunities that all of you have faced over the last few months. And we've got, I put together a few questions to sort of get us started, but what I want to do is drive this from the audience, and so I'll wander around with the microphone. But as always, you know, as a moderator, good to have a question to kind of warm up the crowd, right? So I think one of the ones that, you know, as an extension guy, I've watched from the sidelines and sort of get some questions once in a while, but as you think about implementation of these weekly slash single step, and you can handle whichever piece of that or both that you want as you respond, as you kind of communicate with commercial and seed stock breeders, what do you view as the sort of the biggest advantage of movement to weekly or single step evaluation? So, Kelly, we'll start with you. Ladies first.
Awesome. That's the way to
put you on the spot, right?
Yeah. So I guess we'll kind of start with our, you know, we've been running weekly genetic evaluations for about 402 weeks. Then we transitioned to single step about 50 weeks ago. And so we've been doing it for a while. July 7th will be our year in. I guess when we talk about transitioning to single step, one of the biggest advantages for us was the fact that we no longer had to have that training population. It's the most real-time evaluation possible.
Sweet baby Jesus.
Yeah. So that's been really good for our breeders. Obviously, we get a lot of data in weekly. You know, we average, even in May, I think we averaged around 2,500 genotypes a week coming into our evaluation. And so having that real-time evaluation and not having to wait for that training and that recalibration is definitely a plus for our members and our commercial customers.
Because recalibration is so fun.
Yeah, it's a good time, for sure.
It's a good time. I'm glad I went away. Shane?
You bet. Thanks. Good question, Bob. Hereford Association, I think the two things that I'd like to point out with our evaluation, running it more weekly, I'm doing having it more automated like what we're doing, is that the amount of phenotypic data that we're receiving and the better informed decisions that commercial producers can make with that data in the evaluation, moving away from two evaluations a year, we transitioned to 10 evaluations a year, but the timeliness of that data going in, at first, some kind of see it as a disadvantage, just because the numbers change maybe a little bit more often than what they're typically seeing, but I think getting that data, that more timeliness of that data, where folks can make those decisions rather than maybe regretting a decision, after they get that.
Changes are maybe a little more gradual, but they show up quicker.
Absolutely. And moving away from the interim component, I think was a blessing.
For sure. Nobody's sad about that either, right? Dr. Schaefer, I guess you're next in line there.
Yeah. So I was a bit mystified as why I was on this panel, because there's a lot of other members of the team that would be more qualified, but as I looked across the panel here, I realized that Bruce wanted to raise the average age of the panel by about 20 years. So, I'm serving that role. Anyway, so we started this project, this transition to single step, and specifically to Bolt software, January of 2014. And both Bruce and Dorian were adamant about making this a turnkey weekly evaluation. And I think early on, I have to admit that I didn't see the wisdom in that. I hate to admit that to Bruce and Dorian. But I think, and because we were adamant, or our game plan called for a continuous evaluation, a weekly evaluation, it meant that we had to do, and that man right there, Steve McGuire, who actually would have raised the age a little more, so he should have been up there. It turned out to be a very good approach, but it also delayed the release of the evaluation. But what it did do was it forced us to do some things. And as Steve, if you were in here earlier, Steve was one of the first presenters, and as Steve conveyed, it's a major job. We had 12 breeds and 17 million animals in the database, and up until recently, Steve was basically doing that in somewhat of a manual fashion. And so, because Bruce and Dorian were adamant about making this a turnkey and making it automated, it really forced, I think it created a situation where, I don't think there's any question, we have a much improved database. The other thing, and this is something that Steve has said, and again, I hate to admit any other's wisdom, but Steve said very early on that one of the major pluses about being able to run every week is that if we have issues on either side, if it's a data issue coming in from members, from breeders, other partners in IGS, or our own issues, where we've had trouble with, you know, over time, we'll have some issues that come up on our end of the IGS, and we can fix them. We can fix them almost immediately. So those two things have become I think those are the two major factors that make it a great value. Now, we've only been doing it, we're on a little over a month, so we're rookies in this area, but it's been a good
year. It's too great when it hasn't fallen out yet, so it's a plus, I guess. Ryan, maybe you're relatively new, so you're maybe a little hair straight back on a couple of fronts. But you know, as a young person coming in, how do you see weekly evaluation playing out in Red Angus and in other breeds that you're familiar with?
Yeah, I think I'd echo a lot of Wade's comments on data and being able to fix some of those, I guess, issues. Before I was at Red Angus, I conducted a lot of genetic evaluations, and so I could definitely see those things happening from time to time.
Dealt with the inflow of
different
data sets.
Yeah, and so, you know, having the ability to have real-time updates or weekly updates to that data, I think, helps quite a bit. The other thing I think that'll be really good is when you run twice yearly analysis, you get animals that'll change pretty drastically and pretty significantly. I can think of multiple examples of animals that I've had to look up, and it causes a lot of concern with those breeders or those members. I think now we'll be able to look at those and kind of track those over time, and you can see those changes occurring. And so I think that'll be definitely another advantage of going to that weekly evaluation system.
You're your point's pretty good. I think it'll be easier to find and understand the changes, right? It's not, we have to go back and validate that the whole data extract was right, because we've automated that. We're pretty confident that the data flow is. It's actually into the data and understanding the contemporary group structure. That's an excellent, excellent point. Wade, were you going for a...
No.
Okay, excellent. The next one here, and I'll ask this question, and then we'll go to the audience for some questions. What is either the most frequent question you get from breeders, or the biggest misconception, you know, as you start explaining stuff from, they call in, and the breed improvement job for a while, and you get questions routinely from breeders that are sort of down the same vein of incorrectness. So what's either the most frequent question you've got or the biggest misconception that you'd like to sort of sort out? So, and we don't have to necessarily go, you guys can jump in order, whichever you want, so.
All right, well, I'll jump in since I'm here. I guess it's not really a misconception on my point of view, but more of the main questions that we get, I still get questions of, do we still get questions about single step and the validity of that and those types of things? And those aren't the questions that I'm seeing. The questions I'm seeing are, my genotype came in this week. My full sips are now a lot more differentiated than they were in the past. Even when we move from the multi-step to the single step model, we see a lot more variation in those full sips. And being able to relate that back to their own, if they have progeny of their own, they have kids, and being able to explain it to them in a way where they can digest that material, and really be able to figure out how to utilize those tools and really the power of that, of really finding who's genetically superior.
Great, great perspective. All
right. Yeah, I think as we implemented several new techniques at the Hereford Association and went through kind of the traditional model over to single step of just trying to continue to educate. And I think as a unified front, we have to continue to get over some of the traditional hurdles just with EPD questions, whether it be contemporary grouping or ratios and the impact and those effects. And then as we've added some of these more complex issues, just the continued dissemination of information, getting that out, and just the complete understanding from start to finish. I think there's a lot that we still need to cover as organizations, as groups at BIF, where people feel comfortable with this. It's one of those things that once you have an opportunity to sit down and explain it to folks, they do get it, and they like what we've done. But it's sometimes having to go back to some of the basic things to get them where, okay, yeah, that does make sense.
So ASA was the first breed to release EPDs from the bull run, from continuous bull run. And like I said, it was approximately a month, maybe a month and a half ago, end of April. It's part of May, I guess. Anyway, we anticipated a firestorm. We kind of watched what had happened with some of our other fellow breeds, and there was a real concern about there being a firestorm, and firestorms can tend to create some lack of credibility, if you will. But I would say we're fairly fortunate. Maybe it was because we followed a couple others to the plate. We didn't have as much of a firestorm as we anticipated. The questions that were asked, for the most part, were very, very much in the vein of, why did this animal change? Why did my animal change? And in all cases, we were able to dig under the hood and determine that, well, this is why your animal changed. And in virtually all cases, when we did explain that, it was accepted by the breeder. And I guess in general, So we had been blending, we had been using DNA, so one of the questions was, well, gee, you were using DNA before, and the animal changed substantially more. We saw much more of a spread in animals, say full sibs and those kind of things. And of course the explanation there is our new system brought us more information. We were able to glean or milk more information out of a piece of DNA. And then that was the general, I think the most common question and the most common answer is, we're just gaining more information from DNA, therefore we're going to see more spread. And like I said, in general, we had, I think the questions were very fair, and the acceptance of the answers was, for the most part, pretty much across the board. The answers that we were able to dig up from getting under the hood were accepted by our members.
Well, my question is pretty easy because we haven't released EPDs yet. It's when we're going to release them. It's pretty much the only question I can answer right now.
Soon, right?
Yeah.
Soon.
Yeah. When we feel comfortable, so that's kind of our answer. But that's my main question.
Great.
Jane, you brought up, kind of reflecting on y'all's answers, a really excellent point about the changes in the models based on the incorporation of genomic stuff has sort of made us go back and remember some of our basic genetic stuff, right? So the assumption that animals are equally related to each of their grandparents is pretty convenient assumption that was implemented a long time ago that we all just sort of forgot and took for granted, right? But now we start to move animals away from that assumption, and we see that manifested in changes in half-sibs and full-sibs. And that's maybe a useful thing for us to think about is go back in our genetics textbook, right, and remember some of those assumptions. That's great. At this point, we'll take some questions from the floor. You caught my eye first, so I'll bring a mic to you. And you can address a question to an individual or the whole panel, whichever you'd like. So
the exciting thing about listening today is seeing the next phase of innovation and technology help ourselves and customers make better decisions. With that change comes a responsibility from the associations that you represent sitting on the stage. And any type of change to educate. I'd love to hear some of the comments around, from here forward, how does education or making, whether it be memberships or customer bases, more educated about the change and the value behind those, and what responsibility everyone has to do that, so it can be answered by anybody on the panel, but just speak to that just briefly.
I guess I'll kind of start. I think that the education aspect starts at the association, but I still think that every member has to do their own level of education to their full buyers as well. And so I think, yes, it's important for each association to provide that information to its members, but I think it's equally as important for each member to try to relay that information to their full buyers as well.
And so we've had educational efforts for, I guess, decades. I think it's fair to say extension services, universities, and so forth. But I think it really boils down to me to the fact that most cattle producers they have a sense of, well, show me. Let's show them. Let's see what it can do. Well, in my mind, I think what the changes we have made are going to go a long ways towards reinforcing producers' faith in EPDs. And here's what I mean. So I think we can all share a story where a commercial producer goes to a bull sale to to buy a heifer bull. And by God, that EPD says it's a heifer bull. He buys that heifer bull and he goes home and it wasn't a heifer bull. Okay? So the immediate reaction, if you're a show me kind of person, you just disproved that EPDs work in their minds. You know, now we know it's because, gee, that's a low accuracy EPD. The animal had little to no information on it. We should expect to see lots of cases where we buy a heifer bull and it doesn't work. Well, now with the new technology, as Mahdi showed, and as we've seen, you know, from other evaluations, we're talking about a substantial amount of information, the equivalent of a substantial amount of information. When it comes to calving ease, in our system, it's 15 births. That's quite a bit for a yearling bull, and 20-some birth weights. So I think we're going to see less of this situation where a guy goes to a bull sale to buy a heifer bull, and it's not a heifer bull. Now, I'm not saying that's not going to happen. That's going to happen yet, because after all, 15 calves does not guarantee mate. But I think just the fact, and I appreciate the educational part, but I think it's fair to say that our industry has put a lot of effort, associations have put a lot of effort, universities have put a lot of effort, Extension Service have put a lot of effort into education. But I think this technology will have the potential to turn the table, because we're going to see less situations where it's perceived that, gee, those EPDs didn't work. That's the mentality, is they either work or they don't. Well, we're going to see less of the situations where they're deemed not to work.
I'm very excited about the future and what these different genetic evaluations are offering, because I do think there's a lot more flexibility. And so as we go to add some of these commercially, economically relevant traits that we maybe haven't been able to tackle at this point, I think we can gain a lot of that trust within the commercial industry. Kind of as Wade was mentioning, that the rapid adoption, the rapid implementation of some of these tools, and what it allows us to do going forward is going to be a success story in itself. And so I think those are critical, what this allows us to do going forward. One thing that we're trying to do with our younger membership in our organization, we started a junior steer feed out contest. We have about 300 cattle participate in that, and we're emerging those young people in this new technology, teaching, sharing the information with them, where they can learn about the whole system and maybe get their minds behind this, rather than having to go back and, you know, retrain them at a later date. They're getting to witness some of this right off the bat. And I think some of those programs, as we continue to evolve and get folks involved more in our genetic evaluation programs, more in our information, I think will help.
Just one thing to add, you kind of talked about the responsibility of us as a breed association, especially the way the extension services are going. Bob, you still have a great extension appointment, but there's a lot of places in this country that don't have strong extension appointments, so I think as an association, we do need to pick up that slack. I think as all breed associations and all, whether it's the Breed Improvement Federation or breed associations or the eBeef group or NCBA, I guess I've seen some more collaborative efforts as far as NCBA's genetic series that they did. I thought that was really good to be able to help educate and reach more commercial customers that maybe my Angus voice doesn't reach. But with that, just making sure our members are well involved and understand what they're doing so that they can go out and they can educate their commercial customers, because they've already built that relationship and can spread that word a bit easier. And I've always said, whether it's to my dad, who's a seed stock producer, or to any seed stock producer, that as breed associations and seed stock producers, we have the responsibility to the commercial cattlemen to know exactly as much as we possibly can so we can make sure they can make informed decisions and trust the tools that we have out there.
Great. I think Donald, thanks. Squared up the next one, Matt. I think that's Matt. Matt?
Yeah. Mr. Brown asked me to introduce myself for the good of the audience. I'm Matt Wolfo with the American Shorthorn Association, and I get to walk a similar path as these individuals up here on the stage with our association as far as we have rolled out single step here in the last couple weeks, and like Wade said, thankfully it has been going quite well, and for now we've avoided the firestorm. But I also wear the other hat of being a cattle breeder, and I know from experience of being one that cattle breeders as a group, we can be difficult and challenging to deal with. And so my question to the panel is, what has been your approach, the most effective approach you've had to dealing with your breeder who might be a little more difficult or challenging when it comes to the new release and the technology and the way things have been going with single step?
So all breeders don't let their association staff. Sarcasm, right? Sarcasm.
I guess I can kind of start with that one. We keep hearing this word firestorm, and I don't know if there was really a firestorm in any breed, really. I mean, we had questions, we had changes, and we had people who needed to understand why their animals changed, and you always have those challenging folks, but I think at the end of the day, you work for the American Apes Association, or Matt, you work for the American Shorthorn Association, and you go through those doors every day to work with your membership, work for your membership, and make sure they understand what you're doing in the walls of the association. And so I guess, you know, the best thing you can do is understand, try to relate to them, try to understand where they're coming from, and then get them the best information you possibly can to make sure that they can move forward in a confident way.
Definitely, Kelly. You know, passion drives this business, and, you know, being a fellow cattle breeder too, Matt, we appreciate you being a good Hereford breeder and all those things, but, you know, I think you've got to relate. You've got to relate with the producers, be sympathetic, change is hard. It doesn't matter what industry or business that we're in, change is hard, and, you know, just trying to diffuse the situation and back it by science. All these technologies and what we implemented in our genetic evaluations were well thought out. We had different groups and consulting and a great team of scientists behind our implementation of this, along with the breeder committee that was involved. And so the biggest thing is just trying to get them to calm down and then understand the why of why it was implemented and how it is better.
So I think one of the really important and effective things, both as when I was at a breed association and as an extension person, is listen, right? And I think as we roll out new technologies, we gotta really understand the question that we're being asked. And sometimes that question doesn't, they've seen some change and it takes a little while to figure out the exact motivation or maybe lack of understanding of the question, and that often takes just some patience and listening. The other piece I think that comes with the, and hats off to you guys, working at a breed association requires its own kind of passion, right? Because you gotta be, you're in the people, you're in the cattle business, but you're in the people business first. And so having that ability to be in the public relations and understand and listen to the breeders and help bring them along. And I'm a firm believer in, you know, we do a lot of validation and testing work at breed associations before we roll stuff out. You know what the best test is? Turning it loose to the breeders, right? Who knows your herd data better than you, right? And so don't as a breeder, don't be afraid to pick up the phone and call your association staff or extension folks to help through that questioning, because oftentimes the small, intricate problems in genetic evaluations aren't ferreted out by the likes of the people in the front of the room. They're identified by a breeder. And that one breeder's phone call improves the system for every breeder in the breed, okay? And that's a really valuable and important. So we talk about responsibility, right? We have a responsibility as educators and scientists. But as breeders, we've also got a responsibility in data integrity, data submission, and ferreting out those problems we see, because you guys have an insight that we don't have, right? breeders call up and say, well, so-and-so bull, you got to give me his registration number, okay, because I don't know who that bull is, right? That insight and nuance in data in your herd is really valuable to us, so don't hesitate to pick up the phone and make those contacts. They're really important to us, okay? I think maybe we're standing between you and ice cold beers, okay? So we'll take one more question and then we'll dally it off. Donald, I think maybe he's been rounding up questions for us. Go ahead.
All right.
Joe, that is you. Okay, great. Yep.
Joe Epperly with Wagon Hammer Ranches, and as you all know, I got to just make the transition from breed association to breeder that loves my breed association staff. But just kind of a two-part question. One is, I think one of the challenges we have with genomics in general is that our genomic population does have some bias. We're not getting the bottom end of those cattle run on genomic panels. It just doesn't pay for a breeder for me to run the calf that came out 120 pounds and died. And so does single step do a better job of mitigating that bias versus what we were doing beforehand? And then part two, to follow up on what Bob said, as a breeder servicing and trying to help make these tools better, what are the high-hanging phenotypes that we need to get to as fast as we can as breeders to help out?
Great questions.
I guess one thing that I would maybe challenge you with is thinking about what's the most valuable pen of cattle on your ranch. It honestly, it's your cold pen to make sure that you get those selection candidates out of your system that should not be there. And so the easiest way to do that, or the easiest way to go about identifying those animals at a young age, is to use genomics. And so I understand that there's a cost associated with genomics, but I think if you take it and look at that information and identify those animals, I think that you come out way farther ahead. And so I guess maybe I would challenge in terms of that is looking at that's the most important pen that you can have, and the easiest tool that you have at a young age to do that is genomics.
Maybe said another way, a lot of times we focus on who the victors are, right? But we need to sometimes just think about it as we're going to assign blame to somebody for something, and if we don't make that connection between genotype and phenotype on those bad ones, we've missed the boat, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, good.
I guess I'll briefly comment on both of Joe's points. I think the first thing in my mind at Angus that single step does help us to do is it takes us away from that recalibration, right? That training population where we would have had those animals that were probably the higher performing animals getting genotyped earlier, and then those were the ones that were getting described in our multi-step and our correlated trait model. And so I do think from that standpoint, the genomic population and the way we're using those genotypes is quite a bit more efficient single step. Your second question, I would say that we're making a big push in our association, right, for Maternal Plus. It's a whole herd reporting program where we can build a cow production database. We can get at things like stability and longevity. I think that's one thing we need to continue to grow on, along with all the rest of our fertility traits. And those are probably two areas that I'm very passionate about. I think American Angus, the association and its breeders, were very good at reporting whole contemporary groups in the beginning. And so maybe when we're talking about birth weights or weaning weights or yearling weights, ultrasound data even, that whole herd approach wasn't quite as alarming or significant at that time when we first started with AHRR reporting and had our first EPDs in 1974, right? But now I think we need to move towards that shift and make sure we're getting that cow production data back to the association. So, Joe, I know you have quite a few Angus cows, so if you'd like to get enrolled in Maternal Plus, I'll help you out.
Well played, well played. Shane or Wade, either of you want part of that? Good. Okay, well, as promised, that was we're going to dally off, okay? Before you depart, let's give this group a nice round of applause. On behalf of the BIF board, we appreciate you coming here. I know there's lots of new people in the room. We really value your participation here at the BIF and the decision, or the Selection Decisions Committee in discussion. Thanks for coming. Everybody have an enjoyable evening. The buses, I believe,